Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5, the game on this Tuesday afternoon. We always enjoy our conversations with our next guest. Carl Ravish is on the line with us from ESPN. Carl, how you doing?
I'm doing as well as everybody else. I imagine that most people are in positions where they're saying the same thing. So I would put me right in the same group as everybody else.
Yeah, it's hard to complain, right, because everybody's in the same boat. We're all going through this together.
Hard to imagine, too, is what, a week ago Thursday, we were sitting there interviewing Greg Sankey in Nashville at the SEC tournament, and no one, I think, could imagine where we would end up even from that day when they were canceling tournaments and canceling the SEC tournament.
It's interesting you said that, Carl. We had Joe Fisher on in the first hour, the play-by-play voice for Vanderbilt, and, of course, they were the last game played on that Wednesday night, and I said, what was kind of the mood in Bridgestone Arena? And he said, you know, they had made the announcement at halftime that there's going to be no more fans and people had booed. And then he said he ran into Greg Sankey after the game and said that so they knew that everything was going to get canceled. And Greg at that point was just – told him, well, hopefully you'll have a baseball game to call. But he said he didn't get a good vibe from Greg Sankey, the commissioner at the time, that that was the case, and then we know how quickly all this has escalated, right, where everything would indeed shut down. We've had some fun here with our listeners. You're a good guy to ask this, of having them tweet out pictures of their favorite sports memorabilia that they have at home or in their office or their man cave or what have you, and so we're getting great responses. What's a piece that you have that you've always treasured? What would that be? How would you answer it?
Well, I grew up in New England, so I was a Boston sports fan. I was born in 65. You could do the math. But, I mean, during the time where I was, you know, at home every night during high school, the Celtics were the team to watch, and Larry Bird was my favorite athlete of all time. So I have four different things in my basement, man cave, now kids' room so they can play video games. But it's a it's a Larry Bird signed jersey. It's a Bobby Orr signed jersey. I covered the PGA Tour back in the late 90s and early 2000s. So when Tiger was busy winning majors, I would, after each of those events, have him sign a small poster from Pebble Beach or from St. Andrews. I have those, and there's a Muhammad Ali lithograph. So those are the four names that are down there: Woods, Bird, Orr, and Ali. And I guess on a personal level, it would probably be Bird, because he was so influential in the way that I came to appreciate sports, team sports, effort, attitude, grit, not necessarily being the greatest, most skilled athlete, but certainly doing a lot of other things which make you the best, and, you know, you're loyal to the team. I know the Bulls fans will argue Jordan, and the Lakers fans will argue Magic Johnson, and depending on your generation, you'll say Bill Russell, but you know, each of these individual athletes hold a special part in your heart because they resulted in real positive memories and attitudes. So Bird would be mine, and that shirt would be it.
Wow, that's outstanding. How difficult do you think this is going to be in trying to figure out what's the appropriate time and how concerned? I mean, everybody's concerned at this point, but baseball was just to start the beginning now. And so their season has been put on hold. What do you think we're facing for all the baseball fans out there listening like us? How long do you think this is going to take?
Yeah, it's impossible to answer that with any amount of certainty. I mean, we're supposed to be, you know, in ESPN and then Thursday at Citi Field doing a Baseball Tonight show at 12:30 in the afternoon Eastern time and then a game at 1. So, you know, these next 48 hours are the time where we were all supposed to be celebrating opening day for Major League Baseball and won't be. All I can say is just I know that all sorts of considerations are being discussed as to when it comes back. Do you start with an all-star game? Do you start with some type of exhibition? how long is it going to take once the players are back in camp in order to ramp up? Do you then, as my friend Eduardo Perez has suggested, do you just have games in Florida and Arizona because that's where all the training camps are and you don't need to move people? Do you do it with or without fans? I don't think there is an answer. I do think, like you guys have suggested, that the challenge is not necessarily going to be some declaration from your federal or local, state, county officials to say we're moving back into some semblance of normalcy. It's going to be to what degree does that apply to baseball, meaning fans in the stands, meaning players travel. There are so many different factors that go into that as opposed to just going back to work. And that's, you know, that's going to be a challenge that's going to probably change 1,000 times between now and the time we play the first game. I think from an athlete's perspective and from a fan's perspective, I would imagine that, like most sports fans, you know, I'm anxious like they are just to see any live event. I don't think people would require that you be there in person. They would just like to see activity in action and be able to be invested in a new live event. I mean, I think that the sports networks are all doing an amazing job of filling programming with great sports events, but, you know, many people have seen them, obviously, and we would just like to see something new. So my answer, if I were being asked to do it when I knew it would be safe, I wouldn't do it based on having people in the seats or the stands. I would just do it as a way to provide, you know, people who are at home an opportunity to see something, hear something, read about something if they don't have to see it in person. I think that would be a monumental step, and then you slowly and gradually move towards getting people in the seats.
We're talking to Carl Ravitch from ESPN, and Carl, that's an interesting take. With that in mind, in the meantime, we are seeing a lot of classic games. Number one, right. Do you enjoy watching the classic games? Do you like going back through them? And is there one that you've caught here the last week or so that you maybe found yourself glued to and say, you know what, I didn't remember all this, and I really enjoyed this particular one?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of them. You know, and again, I would go back to the Bird Celtics. There have been some great Celtics-Lakers shows on a 30 for 30. It's just always fascinating to watch folks when you grew up. You know, I'm talking about 1978 to 1990 with regards to being really invested in a local team as opposed to when you go to college and then you get a job in a particular market. I worked in Binghamton, New York, and then Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So, you know, while you're always a fan of the sports teams in the towns you grew up in, it is always interesting. You're watching the Magic Johnson, Larry Bird NCAA championship game where you realize, my God, there were actually other good players on those teams, or how good Bird really was on a team in which you're dealing with Greg Kelsers and Magic Johnsons and others of the world. Maybe it's a byproduct of, you know, being in your mid-50s. The details get a little fuzzier, and it's neat to be reminded of exactly what did happen as opposed to some fabrication of a memory where you're embellishing, like, oh, yeah, I used to walk to school with no shoes, and it was 14 degrees, and all those things that you hear from your grandparents and your parents. Well, I imagine when it comes to sports, those of us who witnessed so many of these things tend to embellish. So seeing all of those does remind you of, you know, and again, just how really good the athletes were even back then. How many times have we gotten into debates nowadays about, could Bob Cousy be able to deal with LeBron James? You know, my answer to that question, and I'm sure you guys have had it brought up, is, you know, we can't compare Bob Cousy to LeBron James because LeBron James is a freak, but all the things that this particular generation has benefited from when it comes to exercise and food and all the things that they benefit from, the athletes of the 60s and 70s and 80s, you know, were just scratching the surface on. So a Larry Bird of 1980 would be very different than a Larry Bird of 2020. Doesn't mean that he's going to be athletically as gifted as the next guy, but he will have benefited from nutrition and from, you know, regimens and trainers and things that they didn't. So those are the comparisons I always find are very difficult to make, because I tend to go to, I can't compare, you know, Babe Ruth with Barry Bonds. Doesn't make any sense. But there is certainly something about those guys that would allow you to say they're different, and they're always going to be different because of the years that they played. So hard to compare, but yeah, there have been some. And I think having covered that PGA Tour, anytime Tiger Woods is playing at St. Andrews in 2000 or Pebble Beach, I'm in because I was actually there, and I'd be honest, it would be hard for me to remember every single shot that that he made, and many of them were unbelievable.
By the way, your mail was there, Carl, just so you know. Your mail got
it sounds like it.
Is that right?
But, Carl, by the way, we're talking to Carl Ravitch from ESPN. And, Carl, another thing that I've had a chance to do is sort of introduce some characters from sports history to my son, who would have otherwise no idea who some of these guys are. One that came up the other day, and I'm sure being from where you are, you can remember this well, and that's the rise, the quick meteoric rise and then fall, unfortunately, of Mark the Bird Fidrich. Like, my son would never have any idea who he was, but the MLB Network took a whole day, played the documentary, and then had that great Monday Night Baseball game that he pitched where he really showed himself what he could do to the country. I mean, guys like that, it's great to be able to appreciate those moments, especially while we have a little extra time on our hands.
Without question. Look, I mean, there's some of the characters I've come across that people, probably wouldn't remember, but whether it be Manny Ramirez, who, of course, was as great a hitter in his prime as you could imagine, and yet would have hundreds of thousands of dollars of uncashed checks in his glove compartment, things that you couldn't imagine anybody doing. Dennis Oil Can Boyd was pitching for the Red Sox, and he was playing a game in Cleveland and talked about how challenging it is to pitch with the winds coming off of the ocean, which, of course, was a big lake, and there weren't any ocean winds. But those types of comments from athletes that you realize in context make zero sense are the types that you remember. Don Zimmer was another great one in the stories he could tell. Currently, Terry Francona is the greatest storyteller of all time. And, that's the beauty of baseball, folks. They do have some photographic memories and some experiences. You know, one story about Francona, even when he was working with us, I don't know if you've heard this, but he and Tim Kirkchen were covering spring training for us, and one of the spots that they had to go stay in was at Walt Disney World, of course, Disney owning ESPN, and they were put up in Fort Wilderness. I don't know if anybody knows what Fort Wilderness is at Disney's Wide World, but it's one of these literal campgrounds.
Yep.
Some people love that, and that's how they want to spend their vacation while going on the rides at Disney. And they each had bunk beds, and at one point Francona thought that this was one of those episodes of Candid Camera, like this was a joke. Somebody was going to come into his room and say, "We're just kidding, you're actually at a different hotel." That didn't happen, so he called him and said, "Let's go outside and make a campfire and roast marshmallows." And that was one of his experiences at ESPN covering spring training. This is from a guy who used to travel in five-star hotels and things like that. So look, most of these people, I think the great part about this, too, guys, is the social media aspect that we are now getting more and more used to seeing does give you a glimpse into people's personalities, which is really what I think we always try to do, at ESPN and I'm sure other places, is to get to know the player. And these mic'd-up segments we did during spring training, you get to learn so much about people you wouldn't necessarily know. So, look, if there's a tiny sliver of the silver lining, it's that you get a chance to know the players as people as opposed to just athletes.
We're talking to Carl Ravitch of ESPN here with us, and you obviously do a lot of basketball games and also the baseball games, but how do you think, because I feel like the NCAA is in an impossible position to handle this because of eligibility and seniors that are missing out on the tournament. We've seen that spring sports, they're probably going to be granted another year of eligibility. But when it comes to basketball, what is the best way in your mind to handle this? Or is there a right way?
Well, you're right. It's very difficult. I would say if I were to have to make a decision, sort of be forced into it, that the basketball season had virtually all but completed itself, understanding you're not playing in an NCAA tournament or an SEC tournament. But you had a season. In fact, you had your entire regular season, that I would be in a position to say that for the basketball and winter sports, that the season is over, with all due respect, as troubling and as frustrating and as angry as you may get. I would land there. And with regards to the spring sports, I would allow them to, if they want to, have their scholarship for the next season. And if for 1 year you know, the NCAA and these colleges have to bite the bullet and extend either roster sizes or the amount of scholarship money, you know what? You got to do it. And you know what? You can afford it. That's where I would land. They deserve the opportunity. This is not their fault, and they haven't had a season, which in a lot of cases means they haven't had a chance to prove themselves, which ultimately could impact their ability to get a job. And that's still a small group we're talking about, but I think that with regards to spring sports, I would afford them the opportunity to return with those scholarships. Understanding we've already made pledges to incoming freshmen with scholarships, you know what? You're going to have to learn how to deal with it, and maybe those freshmen will stay an extra year or two in the sport that they're in.
Carl, Barrett Sports Media put out a field of 64 of the greatest sports center anchors of all time. You are a three seed in this, and I know a lot of people might associate you with Baseball Tonight and other things, but
right. Long
time on Sports Center. Your first round matchup against Michael Kim, how do you feel about it?
Oh, that's a that's a good question. That's a really good point about, that's a high seed. I wouldn't have thought, given you're right about Baseball Tonight, which I've done since 95, but I was heavy SportsCenter flavor from when I got there in May of 93 and did overnight shows with Craig Kilborn, who I hope is on there and is a very high seed. But
he's also a three seed.
Oh, is he? I did so many SportsCenters and was in so many of those SportsCenter commercials. I love doing it. Wish we could still do it, but we kind of made a move that when you're involved in a particular sport, you kind of stay away from it and try to grow another crop of SportsCenter personalities. I would have no idea. I have great respect for Michael Kim and anybody who's on that list. If the next question were to give me the top four SportsCenter anchors that I've ever come across with, is Keith on there? Is Olbermann on there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's a one seed.
Yeah, he's a one seed. He would be a one seed for me. I would say Stu Scott's going to be a one seed.
Well, you unfortunately, Carl, drew a tough bracket. You're in the Booyah region, and Stuart Scott is the one seed.
Well, he's a one seed, and unlike any other, that's what I would base mine on, people who did it differently than anybody else and did it really well. And Olbermann, Stu Scott, I think the other three seed you mentioned, Craig Kilborn. Maybe I'm partial to him since I did so many shows with him and was there when he started. Quick story about Craig Kilborn. After about a week and a half of working with him, and there's probably a heck of a lot of people in your audience who don't know who Craig Kilborn is, but about a week and a half after starting with him on these overnight shows. So we were doing shows from 2:30 to 3 a.m. Eastern time to serve the West Coast audience long before ESPN had an L.A. bureau. I went into the boss and said, I'm sorry, with all due respect, I can't work with him. Like he doesn't seem to understand sports. I'm not sure he even likes them. And to his credit, Steve Anderson, who was in charge, said, just be patient. Just be patient. And lo and behold, it sort of became the Felix and Oscar act. I was the straight guy. He was the incredibly funny, creative, acerbic, and huge, huge sports fan guy. Used to do every lead-in and somehow incorporate the name Pooh Richardson, and it became sort of a staple of his.
I remember.
He'd be one of my top four. And then you kind of get into the whole Dan Patrick, Chris Berman guys that did it at such a high level for such a long time, and I'm sure I'm forgetting about many, many people who are on there. Those three stood out to me because they were just unique. Olbermann, Kilborn, and Stu Scott.
Well, your nails is my favorite.
By the way, if I get so far to lose to Stu, I'd be happy to lose to Stu Scott. That's a win for me.
Yeah.
This is my favorite Craig Kilborn, Carl. I'm sure you remember this one. He's not your Vetus. He's not my Vetus.
Yes.
He's our
Vetus. Of course, he's our Vetus. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Craig would do – I mean, you guys have the Nashville Predators, so you got a whole bunch of hockey fans there. Craig was – I mean, one thing about him, he's a humongous basketball guy. And he knew all about football. He was not very well versed in hockey, so he would, instead of writing an on-camera lead-in about the Predators and the Bruins, he would say something to the effect of, "So you remember when you used to walk down the street and you try to go to your buddy's skating rink that he had in his backyard, if you were lucky enough? But then there was always this sort of odd guy that was hanging around in his backyard who asked if you would." Mind if you'd come back and he would tie your skates for you? let's go see the Bruins and Predators. And that, again, those things made no sense to me, but that was Craig Kilborn in a nutshell, and it resonated. I mean, he was wildly, wildly popular, and I wish that the people that were actually voting on this were the people that actually got a chance to see him. He's a funny dude.
He was kind of a jerk in Old School, the movie Old School. I got to be honest. Kind of a jerk boyfriend.
I mean, some people would say he's a jerk. Other people would say he was true to his character. To me, that is who he was. I wouldn't look at him as a jerk. That's look in the mirror, think I'm really handsome and cool and good looking, and you move on. And he was that guy. He was beautiful to work with.
Oh, that's outstanding stuff, Carl. Always appreciate the visits. Be safe, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right, you guys. You too, and thanks for having me on. Stay well.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Carl Ravish from ESPN. We will come back. There was some really good stuff in there. We'll talk about it on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good stuff from Carl Ravish from ESPN. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Tuesday afternoon.
Do you know the significance of playing that? Of that song?
Let's play that funky music.
Yeah.
Well, Name That Tune is coming.
Well, no. That was Craig Kilborn's theme.
You're not going to be you're not going to be playing the funky music?
No, well, I'm going to play funky music. But Craig Kilborn, that was his theme when he hosted the Late Late Show.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah, that never took off for me. I was always disappointed when he was not on SportsCenter anymore. Carl was bringing back memories for me because back then of course, I was working the afternoon show. It didn't start till 4 o'clock, so I was a minor league baseball player doing my workouts during the day and then going over the show during that time, at least for a limited time. But remember, they used to do Carl Ravich and Craig Kilborn used to do the 2:30 a.m. SportsCenter after all the West Coast games were over, but then they would loop that show in the morning. Continuously for about 3 or 4 hours. So that was part of my routine to get ready for.
Because they didn't have a live
radio show
SportsCenter in the morning.
Yeah, they didn't. Well, they didn't. They would just keep running it until probably 11 or 12 in the morning. 10 or 11 in the morning at least Central Time before they would go on to some other programming. And this was before ESPN News existed or ESPN2 even, or maybe it was the early days of ESPN2. But that was how you got the national sports news, right? Other than, you might pick up a USA Today to go with your local paper, the Tennessean and the Banner back then. So that's how you prepared for a show. You didn't have a phone that had the, continuous news ticker on it. So that's what you were looking at for the big news. And, man, I used to love what in the world would Craig Kilborn have up his sleeve to entertain you while he gave all those highlights?
What is he doing these days? Anybody know?
No idea.
Well, let's see here. If only there were a way to find out. He's been doing some television, like as an actor.
But yeah, I mean, I know he makes appearances on shows.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
he has a steady gig.
I don't think so.
That was some pretty good storytelling by Carl Ravish about Craig Kilborn.
They were great together.
Yeah. But how funny was that hearing him saying that he went into his boss and said, yeah, this is not going to work. I can't do this with this guy.
And then it turned into something, and I think his description was the best that, Ravish was the straight guy and, kind of the serious guy. And then you had Kilborn that was the funny guy.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty funny.
By the way, when he was talking about Manny Ramirez and his checks and his glove compartment, I mean, did he get that tip from Ricky Henderson on what to do with his checks? I mean, what was next? He was going to frame them? By the way, if you've ever been around Manny Ramirez, that's not a surprise. Just saying. Manny was a little
different.
You've been around him. Yeah, he is definitely different. The running joke, I told you that in 1994, I worked in the scoreboard room at Jacobs Field, which was the first year of Jacobs Field. And so the scoreboard room was, the walk-up songs, all the music, before the game when the players are out there warming up. And then, of course, the replays, everything went through the scoreboard room, and there were direct phone line to the dugout. But and then the following year was I wasn't back in the scoreboard room. I was actually covering the 95 Indians team. So they were that was obviously a special year. But the running joke was, because it was at the beginning stages of Jacobs Field, nobody ever could find Manny Ramirez. That the running joke with the media was that they had built underground tunnels for him to get to, like, the players' parking lot to, you know, back there, I guess, where the showers were and stuff like that. The media couldn't go. That he had a secret room that he could get out and go down to these underground tunnels because nobody could ever find him. I mean, no one ever talked to Manny Ramirez, and that was a young Manny Ramirez in those days because...
Well, 94 was his rookie year, right?
Yeah, he was hidden. I mean, he was a baby. But I used to go out in the flats and stuff, and I would run into Manny Ramirez. He was not shy about being out, but that was being out on the town. But when it come to doing media stuff back then, at that time in his career, you couldn't find him. He was nowhere to be found. It was a
now,
different cat.
How did the 95 season end for the Indians? I don't remember.
Oh,
97,
really?
They went back to the World Series and lost Game 7. 95 was they lost in 6, 1-0. Great pitching performance.
How do you feel that you have, as an Indians fan, now worked on two different shows with two Braves fans that like to bring this up?
Well, I'll give you one that I got from an Indians fan that we both know, Darren, about that game. You referenced the 1-0 Tom Glavin / Mark Wohler's one-hit shutout, right? Go back and watch that game. And, of course, you know, the answer to the question is that pitchers would pitch differently if they did it how they did today. But imagine if you took what we see on every baseball game now when we watch, the rectangular strike zone, that is more often than not dead on. You know, it's you know, the umps are very good at being very consistent now with the strike zone. Back then, it was a lot more wide open, up to the interpretation of the umpire, and there, you know, that's just how it was back then. But watch how many pitches Tom Glavin hits the glove where the catcher's maybe set up a couple inches outside off the plate, and how often he gets the call, or how often does he get an Indians player to wave at a pitch out of the strike zone because they know he's getting a few inches off the outside corner. But watch that game and imagine there was that rectangular strike zone in there. It might get you pretty frustrated if you're an Indians fan.
Yeah. Think about it in my lifetime. The 3 World Series. I mean, you're talking about heartbreak. And I don't really want to say the Braves. The 95 series really wasn't heartbreak series. I went to all the games in Cleveland in that World Series. But not as I told you, I didn't go. Even though I covered the team all year, I refused to cover them in the playoffs because I wanted to, as a fan, I wanted to sit in the stands.
Right.
I wanted to take it in. So I literally went to every game that whole run in 95 and sat in the stands with a buddy.
At Jacobs Field? You didn't go to Atlanta?
No, I didn't go to Atlanta, but I did go to every single home playoff game and every single home World Series game that 95 year, just because I wanted to take it in as a fan. I didn't want to have to be working it in the press box. So I wanted to do it differently because, you know, in my lifetime, I didn't think, one, I'd ever see the Indians, you know, in the World Series. Remember, that was not too far removed from the movie Major League, which was at the time, it was just kind of a joke, right? It was kind of it was Hollywood to think that the Indians would ever get to the World Series. But when you look back at that roster, I mean, there were a lot of future Hall of Famers that were at the beginning of their careers, right, on that 95 Indians team. I mean, they were a loaded bunch. And remember, that was a pretty special season.
Their most feared hitter was Albert Bell, who is not in the Hall of Fame. But at the time, he was at the peak, right? He was one of the most feared hitters in the game. So, ironically, he's not in the class you're talking about. Manny Ramirez would be in the Hall of Fame, will be in the Hall of Fame, barring, you know, the steroid issues that he got nailed for at the end of his career. That'll be an interesting one for people to try to sift through. I don't know if he'll ever make it. But you think about it, a young Manny Ramirez, Albert Bell,
Jim Thome,
who's in the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
Sandy Alomar Jr., who is, you know, one of the best catchers of his era. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. But Kenny Lofton,
Omar Vizquel.
At the time of his career. Omar Vizquel. Yeah, there's a lot of guys who are sort of borderline Hall of Fame guys that may or may not ever get in some cases. But top to bottom, that lineup, wow. Eddie Murray.
Eddie Murray was on that team.
Hall of Famer, for sure. He's already in, so we know him. Same thing with Tomei. I mean, that's a pretty darn good lineup, top to bottom.
I believe that year Bell hit 50 home runs.
50 home runs in a shortened season. 50 homers and 50 doubles.
And they won 100 games in a shortened season. That's how good that team was.
144 games, he had 50 homers and 50 doubles. Now, that's a pretty good slugging percentage.
Yeah, and they had some veteran pitchers and, you know, Dennis Martinez and Oral Hershiser, and, of course, they had Charles Nagy. I mean, that was a good bunch. So even though the Braves, you know, that was not Heartbreak City, because 97 and when they just lost to the Cubs, what was that, four years ago, those were, I mean, Heartbreak City. I mean, they were in control. I thought they were going to win those World Series, and they lost both of them. I mean, in 95, I don't know if I ever felt like they were truly going to win it. Even though it was a great series, but I felt like the Braves were
the Braves' pitching staff was so loaded.
Yeah. I never felt like, but, you know, obviously 97, they were one out away. And, you know, Cubs series, they were up 3-2 going back to Cleveland for the final two games. So, you know.
Well, that's Heartbreak City.
Do what, Willie?
They were up 3-1, as you, I'm sure, remember, in that one. So it's like 95, they were down to none and 3-1. So they never really got close within the series. And then in 97, as you mentioned, they got so close in the game seven. But then in 2016, they had the 3-1 lead. That's the painful part of that one.
Yeah. All right. Now that we've opened up all my wounds, we'll take a break. I'll go put some Band-Aids on. We'll come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase next. We're doing just that. We are staying home. Darren McFarland, I'm at my home. South side of town in Rutherford County. Willie Donick representing the east side. Chase McCabe out on the west side. Elijah Campbell back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. A happy birthday to Peyton Manning, who turns 44 today. Chase, I mean, you've got an instrument in your hand. Is there anything you can do? Maybe can you do a little happy birthday for Peyton?
Yeah.
Putting you on the spot.
You are, but that's okay. That's all right. I was just looking up the court. I was trying to figure it out how to actually pick it, but I haven't gotten that far. But we could do the chords. Yeah, hang on. I'm not in a great position, so you'll have to give me a second.
I don't know what that means.
Well, I'm sitting up against a desk trying to hold a guitar and talking to a microphone, so it's a little. There's a lot of multitasking.
Okay.
Let me do this in the next segment.
Okay.
Give me just a second to figure this out.
Rehearsal.
Mainly because I'm about to
play a game on the offense. No.
We are continuing to get great pictures from all of you out there on your sports memorabilia at home. How about this one? From, let's see, the 7th Pred at the 7th Pred. How about a signed Jim Craig Team USA jersey?
Ooh, that is strong.
That is strong.
That's rare. I think in this area, anyway, if you live in Boston, maybe a little easier to get a hold of one of those things.
Well, you heard Carl Ravish really do some serious name-dropping on some of his memorabilia, of course, speaking of Boston. Let's see. Ultimate Predator has weighed in with a picture of his game. He's got a game-winning goal by Victor Arvidsson, his prized possession, in a case. And he said, now if I can just get Victor Arvidsson to sign it. Well, I'm sure that can be done. Ultimate Predator, that can be done. That's a nice
one. I got an interesting one from our buddy Mike Schmidt, a hardcore door, as he's known on Twitter. And he sent me a picture of the 1984 World Champion Chicago Cubs pennant. Now you're saying to yourself, wait a minute, world champion Chicago Cubs. Well, remember in 1984, they had a great year, and they led 2-0 in the NLCS against the Padres in a best of five. So they were one away. But, of course, as was the history of the Cubs up until 2016, it just didn't go their way. They lost the next three games. But they made some pennants somewhere along the line, you know, to have them ready to go when the day came. And not only did they have them winning, it said World Series 1984 Chicago Cubs. Well, they're very rarely put out there, but Mike Schmidto somehow has one, thanks to his dad, Larry Schmidto. And so he sent a picture of that. Now, that's something, that's an odd thing to collect.
Well, ironically, Mike Schmidto has sent me some things as well. And one of the things we were just talking about, he just tweeted at me, it's a World Series poster of the 1997 World Series, Indians and Marlins. Pretty cool. And the
that
other
does
one
sound like cool stuff.
Yeah, and the other one that he sent, and I was trying to sift through all of this to find, because I said, Willie, you could appreciate it. As I try to find it again here real quick, here we go. From Mike Schmidto, is he's got a picture of them winning the first ever, you know, a framed picture in Omaha, College World Series, of them winning the first World Series. And he's also got a shirt that says back-to-back. And it's a Vanderbilt back-to-back national,
right,
NCAA division, basically national champions shirt. And so those are really cool pieces of memorabilia.
Which they didn't win.
Right.
Remember, that's another one that they could have made a lot of money off of had they won one more game. But evidently, whoever's making those shirts, I'm sure Mike got a good deal on that shirt.
No doubt about it. But how about that? I mean, how many people have that? Back-to-back national champions that didn't happen, right? Those shirts, usually we laugh and say they're over in third world countries. Well, Mike Schmidto's actually got one of those shirts.
Pretty I knew somebody cool. that had a Titans Super Bowl champion shirt.
Yes. Really?
Yep, because they worked for the company that made them all.
Nice.
And so they had one.
By the way, here was a unique one. I've told this story before, and I'm pretty sure you guys have seen. I teamed up with the good folks at Old Hickory Bats. You know, they make a lot of bats in our area, up north of town, for a lot of major leaguers. And I hooked up with them. I went up there to their plant, and I got all the groomsmen in my wedding, and I got them personalized bats for, you know, basically the colors of their favorite baseball team. And Hugh Britt actually tweeted that out. I said, it's an honor. And I got their autographs and had them put that on the bat as well. And he put out the picture of, and it's got our wedding, our names and our date of our wedding. And he tweeted that out, and Old Hickory Bats retweeted it. So, yeah, I've still got mine. That was really cool, by the way, to go up there. Willie, did you ever go through? I know we used to have them in studio years ago.
Yeah.
But did you ever? Have you ever gone through
now.
Up there? Yeah. Oh, yeah. But they. Yeah,
I've never. No, I've never been there. I've never been there live.
Pretty cool place. Chase, when we went to the Kentucky Speedway years ago for a race, I spent the weekend there, and remember we were dealing with a lot of rain. Went to Old Hickory Bats, or not Old Hickory Bats, went to Louisville Slugger that weekend.
Yeah,
that was
right.
Cool to go through that plant.
You took Lauren and Maddox.
I did.
To that.
Yeah, we had a blast at the Louisville Slugger plant, and you actually get to go through the tour as they're making the bats. So yeah, I've gone through two of those, Old Hickory Bats and Louisville Slugger, and it's just, they're really neat places. Really neat places. So, thought those passes along.
All right.
Keep those coming in, by the way.
I got one more for you guys here before we let the maestro strum it on the guitar here for the last segment. Our man Jimmy Shapiro had some odds. Have you guys looked?
I have not.
At?
I haven't looked.
Okay. Win totals over under for the 2020 regular season as things stand today. All right, let's the Titans. What do you think it is?
The over-under win total today?
Today. Regular season win total.
Well, considering they get 9 wins every year, I'd say I put it at 8.5.
I will.
Despite all the maneuverings in the division, you still say 8.5?
Well, I don't believe it's 9.5. That's too high, so I would go 8.5.
I'll Price is Right him and go 7.5.
It's actually 9. It started at 8.5. It's gone up to 9. The opening win total last year was 8.5. So it has gone up a little bit. It's the most in the division, and that's probably not a big surprise. So according to our man Jimmy, he's got them as the favorite to win the division at this point. The Jaguars are at 5.5. The Colts are at 8, and the Texans are at 8. So again, a lot of parity is the look from 30,000 feet, if you will.
Huh. All right. Get your guitar
so it's
ready.
Kicked up to 9.
Kicked up to 9. I'm a little surprised by that. I would have figured it would have been at 8.5. But, okay. Interesting. We'll come back. Have that guitar ready. Chase to close out Tuesday's show. We'll do that next on Darren Donica Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Looks like Rick Stansberry has been busy. While there's not a lot of sports news going on, Western Kentucky has landed another big-time recruit in the 2021 class. Zion, not Williamson, but Harmon. Zion Harmon. So he's getting a lot of praise from the national guys. I saw Jeff Goodman, John Rothstein, and those guys saying that's quite a pull for Western Kentucky to get him in the 2021 class. So just thought we would pass that along. With that being
very
said,
cool.
Chase, do you have your guitar ready?
I do. So are you right,
now, why don't we do this, Chase? As you warm up, let's maybe lay out rules for the game here. All right, let's have me against Darren, and let's just see, just for practice. We want to see if we can perfect this.
Oh, I'm not. I don't want to turn this.
What do we say? 10 seconds.
Yeah, no, yeah. I don't really want to turn this into a game.
Why not?
Because that's
no.
Not
it's,
my...
Well, you're afraid to lose. Is that what it is?
Yeah, I'm just. This
why
is
no?
Not my...
No, you're a test case. You're a test case for listeners who are good at this that want to compete. That maybe we could have some little rules where we could give away a prize. So the question is, how many seconds should Chase play it before somebody could take a guess at it? Is that a good way to go? Or Chase, what do you recommend?
Yeah, I mean, I think like 5 seconds, something like that.
That's going to be hard. You're probably going to need more than 5 seconds.
Five would be hard, but that's the key. That would be the key. Somebody could dare. That's how Name That Tune did. Like, I can name that tune in 3 notes or whatever.
So you're talking about have people text in?
Well, you could. Well, no, we'd have two people on the phone, and we'd say, all right, Darren, maybe we give a clue about the song, and then you say, okay, I can name that song in 10 seconds. And then if I feel more confident, I can say, well, I can name it in 9, and we go back and forth, and then you say, name that tune. And then Chase says, all right, here's the amount of seconds. Right? So let's say you said, I need 15 seconds. And I say, well, I can name it in 10. You said 9. I say 8. You say, name that tune. So 8 seconds. So I'll get the stopwatch, and we'll see if I can name it in 8 seconds. And if not, I miss, then Darren gets a chance to steal it. And he gets to play it for as long as he wants at that point.
Okay. I'm fine with that, Darren.
All right, Chase, whenever you're ready, I'll start the clock.
Okay. All right. Let's do this. Hang on. I already messed it up because my mic is messed up. All right, here we go.
Ah!
Sorry.
Okay, that's 8 seconds.
Any idea?
I got a couple bonus seconds. Is that Green Day?
I was nope. Starting. It was starting to sound familiar, and then you stopped. I was like, starting
same
to get
chord
into
progression.
It. Yeah, I was starting to get
well,
into it. And
see,
then
that's
you
that's the strategy of the game. That's the strategy of the game. So a good strategy, Darren, for you would be to let me be overconfident like I just was, and then I miss it because time of your life, Green Day, is what popped into my head. But I'm not sure if that's right.
No, it's the same chord progression as that one, but not quite.
All right, so now what happens is now you get to play it again, and Darren gets as much time as he wants because I'm out.
Okay. All right, I'm putting this on Periscope, by the way.
Let's see if Darren can get it.
All right. Any idea?
No.
It's a little tough because you don't have vocals or another guitar, but it's for the answer?
That's what's hard. Give us a clue. Is it an 80s song?
I'm going to say late 70s.
Late 70s.
Yeah.
They just showed, I didn't realize today, 19 years ago today is when Randy Johnson blew up the Bird.
Oh, really?
Oh, man.
They're showing it over and over again. 19 years ago today.
All right, give me the initials of the singer.
Well, how about I do this? It's a group.
It's a group, okay?
Yeah.
All right, I have to admit, this is going to be a tough game because, as you said, there's no vocals. It's just the one guitar.
Mm-hmm. Take it easy.
Okay.
Never done that.
All right. We'll do another one. Who wants to go for Willie or Darren first?
We got limited time, so just do what you
okay, yeah,
do.
We're in the interest of time. Let's see if we can get this one straight up. I got it.
That's Tom Petty.
Last Dance with Mary Jane.
There you go. Very good. Very good.
All right. This has got potential. I think this has got potential, Darren.
I don't think so.
I've always wanted to be a game show host. I think we can find some guinea pigs that will come on tomorrow and try to compete for this thing.
You think?
Darren's not feeling it.
I think this is the way we end the show. I think this is the way we end the show.
I don't have a problem ending the show that way, but I mean, it's not. I mean, we nailed Tom Petty, but I mean,
No, we're going to get two people that think that they are better than us,
and they
can compete for it.
In this town, Willie, I have no doubts there are people that can smoke us in this game. In this town, in this market, no doubt.
Okay, so tomorrow we're going to get somebody to go up and compete with us.
It's closing time.
Okay, so it is closing time. So there's the cue.
You can close us out, Darren.
That's going to do it for us today. This is the way we like ending the show now. A live show, right? We end with a live performance by Chase. Everybody have a great rest of your day. We'll be back at it tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then. Be safe.